Kevin Newman began his career at Global in Toronto and worked in their Ottawa bureau from 1983 to 1987. He worked at CTV and then at the CBC hosting Midday. In 1994, he joined ABC News, where he anchored, among other programs, ABC World News Tonight and Nightline. He also co-hosted Good Morning America. He returned to Canada in 2001, where he established Global National, which he's anchored since. He is also a Peabody, Emmy, and Leo winner, as well as a multiple Gemini nominee. As well, Kevin Newman is an MS ambassador with the Multiple Sclerosis Society of Canada. Please welcome to thecommentary.ca, Kevin Newman. Good morning, Mr. Newman.
Hey, Joseph.
Your title at Global, what is that? Is that...
It's a sort of a double-barrel thing. It's anchor, obviously, which is kind of the performance part of it. And then there's executive editor, which is, basically I don't, make every editorial decision, but what I wanted was a certain degree of creative control over, and independence as well, over what the content was in the newscast. So I thought it was important that there be someone with sufficient stature to sort of establish the editorial direction of it.
And so you work in conjunction with the other producers, I assume?
Yeah, we've got a team of producers and writers and reporters, but the overall sort of editorial strategy of the broadcast, not on a day-to-day basis, but sort of long-term, is something that I wanted to have a big hand in.
I'm quite interested in this, so indulge me for a second.
Yeah, sure.
About when you do the show. Do you do it live for every time zone?
Not for every time zone. We do it live for Ontario and Quebec at 3:30 BC time, and then we update it as it goes across and update the stories that require updating. So, by the time it reaches out to BC and Alberta, there's usually something that needs to be changed.
I've got three stories here that I want to talk about.
Yeah.
Of course, Mayor Thorpe, Alberta, that'll probably figure prominently on your newscast tonight.
Yeah.
How do you cover something like that? Do you, obviously it has impact for the people in Alberta. Do you have to tinker with it to make it more interesting for the other parts of the country?
I think that's one of the... I don't think you do. I think that's just one of those tragedies that is so profound and so disturbing that it doesn't matter where you live in Canada, whether you live in Nova Scotia or Yellowknife, you're still going to be interested in what happened before, what happened after, and is there anything to learn from the event. So, there are some events like that one that even though it happens in Alberta, there's enough people around the country who have opinions about, grow-ups, who have opinions about gun control and capital punishment and the police, that it's fairly universal.
The Liberal Policy Convention that was in, I thought it was in Toronto, it's actually in Ottawa, it was in Ottawa this weekend.
Yeah.
Do you think anything of consequence came out of that?
I'm going to have to take off on that one, because I was up at a cabin, snowmobiling across a lake this weekend and completely ignored the Liberal Policy Convention. So I haven't really, I didn't really pay any attention to it, which is a terrible thing to admit. But sometimes even we have to get away from the news. So, those policy conventions in between are generally not all that important to the bigger picture.
Right.
I'll say that much. I mean, they're pretty well a rubber stamp on the leadership, and they're an opportunity for the party to come together. But whether they change anything, I not usually.
Did you get a sense when you anchor the news every night of the stories that Canadians are thinking about, that they're most interested in?
Yeah.
Is Gomery, same-sex marriage, are those things what are confounding Canadians at this point?
My bet is that, I think there's a lot of discussion of same-sex. I think that is one story that Canadians talk about. The Gomery Commission, anything to sort of do with politics, most Canadians, I don't think, are very engaged in. And, it's one of the reasons that on Global National we do politics. We don't do it as much as the other guys, because it doesn't, things that I hear anyway, is that it doesn't really affect people's lives in a fundamental way. What seems to affect people's lives and opinions is often, court cases that generate these issues like same-sex marriage. So, crime and things like that are things that people pay attention to. They pay attention to healthcare issues, technology issues. And they pay increasing attention, I think, to the world. But quite often, the sort of everyday politics from Ottawa is something that they don't pay a lot of attention to.
I talked to Pierre Bourque an hour ago, and one of the things we talked about was the state of the media in this country. Doing a national newscast out of Vancouver, was that something that... I mean, who decided that?
Well, that was decided by the Astros, to be honest. I mean, what they wanted, like, we only had one bit of marching order, which was, you know, do something different than CBC and CTV. And one of the ways that they wanted to define its distinction was to put it in Western Canada. Because the truth is, and, you know, in the media world, it doesn't matter where your base is, you can still do a newscast. I mean, there was a time, maybe 20, 30 years ago, it would have been difficult to do a newscast from here nationally, but it's sure not now. It's, you know, whether it's Toronto or Vancouver, that doesn't make a lot of difference technically. What it can sometimes make a difference of is, you know, we're only human and we're sometimes influenced by the place that we live. So, you know, you may see more Western-based news on Global National. You probably see more of a Western attitude toward politics and tax reform. And I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. It allows, you know, a group of journalists somewhere other than downtown Toronto to reflect on the national and international agenda.
And what are the ratings like for Global National? Are people tuning in?
Oh yeah. No, I mean they're. If you look at our ratings from the most recent ones we have, which would be from the fall of this year, we have the same audience numbers as Peter Mansbridge and the National on the main CBC network. Each of us are strong in different parts of the country. I mean, we are the number one national news from in BC, in Alberta, Saskatchewan, and Manitoba. CTV is the number one newscast in Ontario and Quebec, and CBC is the number one national newscast in Atlantic Canada. So we've almost, and it's interesting, we've sort of carved up different sections of the country to dominate in. And, you know, for each of us, the challenge is to try to break into, you know, the other guy's backyard.
I'm curious to know why you compare, obviously it's a national newscast, but
right.
the hours are different for you and Mansbridge and Robertson.
Right.
Hannah Mansing in Vancouver as well.
Right.
Is he your main, is that where you gauge your...
No, we like to sort of gauge ourselves against the other guys because we have the same, you know, we're basically driven by the same content requirements in that, you know, we're all covering the world, we're all covering the country, not so much your backyard. And so that's, you know, that's our playing field. Ian's show is on against us, but not to sound, although it does sound that way, but, you know, we dominate that time slot, like 2.5 to 1 across the country, right? We have 750,000 viewers, I think they have fewer than 300. So, you know, we like to sort of aim high and try to take on the big dogs if we can.
300,000, not 300.
300,000, yes, of course.
We don't want to get...
No, they're fine.
The importance of taking the show on the road, I've noticed that of all the anchors, you seem to travel the most.
Yeah.
Correct in noticing that, or?
Yeah, no, I think so, at least domestically. I mean, Peter has a little more budget to travel internationally than we do. But mostly, I mean, I'll be honest, that's mostly just an attention-getting thing. I mean, sometimes what we want to do is we want to tell viewers this is a story that we want you to pay extra attention to, and so you sort of plunk me there or Tara Nelson and just, you know, that's sort of a visual and a creative way to say, you know, we're trying something a little out of the ordinary. And, you know, usually what we do is, you know, if we do that, we dedicate more than half of our broadcast to an examination of that issue or that place that we're at. We don't just sort of do that just to have a pretty background. You know, we do it as we're going to do it on Thursday in Edmonton. We do it because we're going to tell people that, you know, we're here to look in a different depth at something. And again, it goes to we're the new guy in town, so, you know, we have to do things now and again that are different from what the other guys do and generate interest and attention.
One of the things your critics will point to is the folly of convergence. The two newspapers in this city, BCTV.
Yep.
Obviously, I'm sure it's worked out for you, has it not?
Well, for us, it's worked out tremendously because what it gave us right out of the gate was access to, people with international reporting experience that Global News, BCTV News, didn't have. So we could, you know, the newspapers could be sending Matthew Fisher over to, you know, Iraq, and we had somebody who had war experience and conflict experience that we could use to do some reporting for us. So in that sense, it worked. It totally worked for us.
Well, what do you say to people, though, that say that there are a lack of voices in the mainstream media today because of convergence? How do you respond to those critics?
Well, there are obviously, I mean, what there's, it's, I don't know so much that the issue is a lack of voices. I think the issue is corporatization of media. I mean, there are, you know, one of the things that that I'm very protective of at Global National, and I know most other editors are, is that there's a distinctive voice to this broadcast versus, you know, the one that comes at 5 and the one that comes at 6:30 on the same network. And the reason is you just don't want to bore people. You don't want to all have the same voice. Otherwise, people naturally think, well, I've heard that. So I think there's as much, if not more, sort of divergence of voices. What there obviously is fewer of is owners. You know, that's not just a trend in Canada, that's happening around the world, that there has been a corporatization of media ownership over the last 20 or 30 years.
In reading one of your bios, and I indulge me for a sec here, it says that having an ex-Marine as a buddy has made you do things you thought you'd never do.
Yeah.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
Well, like climbing rock walls, and I lived in the States at the time, and like many Canadians, I didn't grow up, you know, around the gun culture.
Right.
He did. And so one of the things I asked him to do was, you know, teach me how to target shoot, you know, take me out hunting. Couldn't kill the animal. But I wanted to gain an understanding of what that was. And I turned out I really enjoyed target shooting. Didn't like the hunting stuff, but I enjoyed the target shooting. So he opened my eyes to that. He opened my eyes to how Americans see the world. Toughen me up, I think, too.
Talk to me about being a Canadian in that American context. I listen to Don Imus every day.
Yeah.
And he always, you know, makes fun of Jennings about being, you know, a Canadian commie or stuff like that.
Yeah.
Did you have trouble fitting in there, or was there a...
Well, I wasn't at that level. I didn't. I didn't have trouble fitting in because of anything that Americans did. They were very welcoming and, you know, the great thing about America is they look at you and they say, you got something to offer this country? Come on down, you know. They're not in the least bit insecure about, you know, accepting people from other countries and the talents that they bring. Where I didn't fit in, I guess, was in my own mind, in that as a reporter, sometimes I felt, you know, I'm broadcasting to Americans who I don't really know as well as Canadians because I didn't grow up as an American. So there were times that my sort of journalistic antenna was a little skewed. I could go down there and sort of find it interesting to report there because some of the issues are quite different there, especially when they deal with racism. It never really felt like home. And ultimately, for me anyway, it came down to, okay, this has been a great experience, but if I'm going to be a storyteller, I want to tell the stories of my home.
I'll ask about Dan Rather, but since I mentioned Jennings, is he set to retire? Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I know nothing about that. I mean, I guess at some point for sure. I mean, that's obvious, but I don't think anybody's talked about any timeline. And in fact, I think ABC's quite happy to have him there now because there's been so much change at the other two networks.
What about you anchored Nightline, and there's a lot of talk.
Actually,
about
I reported for Nightline.
So you know the program.
Yeah.
What is it about Nightline that just that people talk about it? People, when they tried to lure Letterman over,
yeah,
and then now that they're thinking of putting Stephanopoulos in there,
yeah.
What is it about Nightline that is just that makes it such an important program?
Well, I mean, you know, journalists love it because it's clever and it's fresh. It allows you to explore context. It allows you to explore depth. You know, I still think it's the best TV show, you know, TV news show around. It's not overstaffed. It's got quite a small staff actually, but the thing I loved about working for it was that it drove down a lot of the journalism and basically said to its journalists, just go out there and really tell us what you see and think. Don't just produce the normal. Don't just, you know, anticipate what you think we want to hear. Actually report. And I think that's what I took away from the experience, was that there was so little at the network level anyway, and local level too, I think, so little real reporting going on in television. It was all sort of, everybody was producing stories, but they weren't really reporting and challenging enough, and they weren't sort of looking at things and saying, well, how do we know that? And, you know, show me the proof, or, you know, challenging authority to defend its opinions, and all those things I were in abundance in Nightline, and just so freaking refreshing that it was, it last, it, it it stayed with me.
Dan Rather, he steps down on Wednesday. I'm wading through the Ken Auletta piece in the New Yorker.
It's good.
It's a very long though.
It is, but it's deep.
He's a very good writer. Yeah. I thought the photograph of Dan Rather was just disgraceful.
Yeah, I looked at it too. It was. I don't know what they're trying to do there, but it's a little too close.
Do you think that there's a lot of talk, especially when Brokaw retired at NBC, that the role of the anchor is fading, that it's not as important as it once was. I in the Canadian context, the TV critic at the Toronto Star said that the sun is setting on the Evening Stars. Knowlton Nash, in an op-ed for the Sudbury Star, still said that anchors have a role and that they're very important to our culture.
Yeah.
How do you see your role as an anchor and delivering the news to Canadians every night?
I think we're a bit like news firefighters in that, you know, when you don't need us, we can seem like we're sort of sitting around playing cards a bit too much. But when you need us, you really need us. And I think the real role of an anchor is to use all of what he or she learns through their lives and professional lives about context, about solid reporting, about not reporting what you don't know, and doing it in a live situation when there's a moment of crisis. And in that sense, you also have to have a certain amount of calmness to you. And I think that's the real role and the enduring role of a TV news anchor, is that they're the person that you will turn to in a time of crisis for perspective, for reassurance, for facts, for probing in a live news situation. And I think people are always going to need that. It's not going to be enough to look at the picture of the Twin Towers. You actually need someone talking about it in the context of it and holding your hand through it, and that's the most enduring part. The rest of it is you know, you still apply your skills on a daily basis on a day like this, but, you know, at the end of the day, I think the enduring quality is that, you know, when the community, when the country, when the world needs to come together in a moment of crisis, that, you know, you're there.
What about just talking specifically about Rather? Do you think the job went to his head? What went wrong there? That he's not going off into his retirement very well.
No, I mean, first of all, don't forget he was anchor for 24 years. So to think that something went wrong is, I mean, I don't know about you, but I've never held a job for 24 years.
Yeah.
So it's. Yeah, I don't think so. I mean, something went wrong with the story in the twilight of his career. There's no doubt about that. And unfortunately, you know, that will be part of what is people remember him for. But, you know, it's like any job, right? That there's really no excuse for what happened there, and it shouldn't have happened, and perhaps he wasn't diligent enough in making sure that the people who worked for him protected him from that happening. But, you know, 24 years as anchor, another 25 years as a correspondent before that, that's a pretty good run in my book.
But do you think that the role of the anchor, though, that it does go to some people's heads?
Oh, sure it does. There's no doubt.
How do you prevent that from happening?
I don't know that you can, unfortunately, because it's, you know, it's a very powerful position. You have to be aware of the power of the position. You have to have a certain amount of ego to survive the position, because there's a lot of stress involved, and people don't like what you're reporting, they tell you. So, you know, I think a little of it actually has to go to your head just to be able to not be pulled in 1,000 different directions. You have to be able to hold your center. You know, if it gets to the point where, you know, you're being abusive to people, then obviously that's a different issue. But, yes, the power goes to just about every person's head that I'm aware of, and it's gone to my head to a degree, too. I don't know that it's that different from, let's say, a CEO of a company or somebody who's put in a leadership position. You have to, if you are given power, you have to exercise it. Otherwise, you know, why is it there?
What about, what do you make of Fox News, The Daily Show, keeping you guys in check? Do you think that that's a role that they play?
Well, I love The Daily Show does.
Uh-huh.
I think totally that, you know, in fact, when we were starting up Global National, we took a good hard look at The Daily Show and said, you know, what is it that they're doing that's resonating with the viewers?
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're doing it better than we're doing it. And one of the things we tried to take away from it was just sort of pointing out the absurd and allowing ourselves to point out the absurd. That, you know, if there was this period before Paul Martin became liberal leader where for 9 months there was nobody else running against him, and everybody else, you know, in the media was saying, you know, the presumed liberal leader or liberal leader, you know, to be, and we just, you know, called him the next liberal leader and put a crown on his head graphically.
Right.
And that's something that we stole directly from The Daily Show, which is that, you know, the thing that they're so great at is when we do stupid stuff, like try to hide behind impartiality when it's just so damn obvious that something is stupid or wrong. So I like what they do. I'm less of a fan of Fox News. I think they're really well produced, and I think they're really flashy, but are they good journalism? I don't think so.
One of the things that I found interesting in reading your bio again, you interviewed Margaret Thatcher.
Yeah.
What was that like?
She was a very sexy woman to interview.
Really?
Yeah, which you would never think of. But what she had, and this is how I think she kept control over a lot of her cabinet, was she would just lock her eyes on you, and you'd feel like you were the only man she talked to, like, in forever. And you would just, the power of that, and you know, the power of how she sort of did that was, I mean, there aren't many people that I couldn't speak, you know, I just lost myself in, but she was one of them. She just seemed to lock into you, and suddenly you were just sort of in her grip. And, you know, I used to say that to my buddies, and they used to think I was crazy, but she was a very sexy woman interview.
And you probably lost out to her, I bet.
Totally.
Really?
Completely.
Yeah. The other thing I want to ask, I've got the Super Cities Walk run for MS.
Yes.
April 10th, Sunday, April 10th, and it's here in the Lower Mainland.
Yeah, they do them different days across the country.
Your role as an MS spokesperson, your wife has MS, does she?
She does, yeah.
And talk to me about the work that you do for the Multiple Sclerosis Society, because I think it's very important work and worth talking about.
Yeah, I mean, there's some, you know, I mean, you talk about sort of how the power of this position goes to your head, but there's a lot of good things you can do with this position. One of the things is that you can sometimes, you know, train a light on something that doesn't get a lot of publicity. And one of the things about MS is that they're, you know, it's unfortunate, but you almost need star power to raise money. You know, Michael J. Fox has made a huge impact on Parkinson's disease. And there has been very few people and almost nobody with MS other than Montel Williams, but, you know, people either love him or hate him. But there's been nobody who's been able to sort of come forward and say this is something that, you know, requires a lot more research money. So, you know, the position that I have gives me a certain degree of, public profile. So if I can use that to sort of move it toward raising awareness of MS that, you know, people still aren't really sure whether it's MD or whether it's, you know, cystic fibrosis or what is MS. It has a long way to go to sort of growing in the public's consciousness, and it's only through that you can begin to raise some money to get some research done to solve the problem.
I was reading this, and I found this quite striking. Approximately 50,000 Canadians are affected by MS, and it usually strikes between the ages of 20 and 40.
Yeah, it's usually women. There's far more Canadians with MS than there are Americans. Seems to be people in northern climates for some reason. There seems to be some vitamin D sunshine aspect to it. And the terrifying thing about the disease is that it takes you on a journey, your body takes you on a journey that is completely unpredictable. You can have an onset of MS and not know whether you're going to get your faculties back. Often you do, but it leaves some sort of residual thing. So the real terror of the disease, you know, there's no good disease, but, you know, MS is so completely random and so unpredictable, and almost nothing is known about it. There's just so much work to be done.
SuperCitiesWalk.com is the website, right?
Yeah.
And they can get information for that.
Yeah, and it's, you know what? It's a real low-key event, you know? It's not one of these, you know, the MS Society is made up of a lot of volunteers. It's not sort of as slick and professional as some of the others. But it's a really, really casual way to spend a nice weekend, and there's no, you know, pressure. People, I know some people, you go out and you think, I just don't want to be yelled at, but there's none of that. It's just a nice, take a stroll, you know, try to get your 10 or 15 clicks in and raise some money.
I'll put the link up on the site. SuperCitiesWalk.com.